And we're back. Taylor Report, CIT, 89.5 FM. And it's Friday. It's Victoria Day slash Patriots Day. And the oldest part of the first group of Europeans celebrating Patriots Day. That is fight for democracy and self-rule, which is an alien concept apparently in Ontario. So our liberals want to celebrate Canada, pardon me, Victoria and First Nations Day. They got to get
Said First Peoples. Isn't quite the same thing. Yeah.
First, pardon me.
They said First Peoples.
First Peoples. Pardon me. Yeah. Okay. First. Yeah. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, with us is Stephen Gowans, who has a great website, gowans.wordpress.com. And Stephen has asked the big question of, should the United States bomb Syria? Are you there, Stephen?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hey, thanks very much for joining us. You don't seem to be in favor of bombing Syria. You examined the latest innovative ideas of why they might, which you examine the question of the alleged use of chemical weapons in Syria, which Obama calls the red line. What do you make of that? What's your skepticism about this chemical business?
Sorry if I'm hesitating there. Just some feedback or distortion.
Is it breaking up on you for you?
Yeah, sorry.
I'll tell you what. Shall we try to make another link? We'll call you right back. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
We'll call you right back. Right. Anyway, we'll get him right back. That was Steve Gowans. I recognize his the sound. At any rate, I'm going to tell you, if you want to prepare yourself in terms of getting information on the subject, go to Angry Arab. It's a website. Just write Angry Arab, and you will find him. You want the professor from Stanislaus, California. On his behalf and on my behalf, I say he's got totally his point of view, and I would say whatever you subscribe to in terms of how to analyze, he puts enough facts on the table that you really, it's nutritious. He, after all, speaks Arabic. He's a conscientious academic. He's a very smart, very funny intellectual, but he's following this matter very closely and is reporting about the heavy fighting that's going on today. And I think we have you back, Stephen. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll just try to fight our way through.
Okay.
If it gets me odd, you might hold the phone away from yourself a bit, if that works. I don't know.
Okay, we'll try that.
If you could just tell us, you say that the chemical weapon thing it doesn't seem to have any basis, no real evidence, is my understanding of your case.
Well, you're right. There is no evidence. And, you know, you can go in detail through the reasons why there is no evidence. I mean, I think even the White House has kind of acknowledged that there is no real compelling evidence. The media has certainly been keen to encourage the United States or someone to attack Syria. But apparently the United States doesn't seem to be prepared to do that at the moment. And the White House has been dismissing many of these claims and pointing out the holes in the arguments that Syria has used chemical weapons. There was a very extensive interview that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad did just a few days ago, in which he was asked about chemical weapons, and he made a very interesting point. He said, well, look, I mean, chemical weapons are supposed to be weapons of mass destruction, which means that when they're used, they should be killing masses of people. And yet it's claimed that the Syrian government has used chemical weapons, and yet the number of victims totals no more, or the alleged number of victims totals no more than two dozen. Mm-hmm. So how could it be that we've used chemical weapons and not have produced masses and masses of casualties? I mean, the claim is inconsistent. Mm-hmm. It could be that, or perhaps it's the case that chemical weapons really aren't weapons of mass destruction. But anyway, I mean, the case for Syria having used chemical weapons is exceedingly weak at best. And the other interesting thing is that the UN group that is investigating the use of chemical weapons in Syria has said that it has concrete suspicions that the rebels have used chemical weapons and has absolutely no evidence that the government has used them.
Yes, that's, by the way, an interesting figure. That's Carla Del Ponte, mm-hmm. and she has been part of their tribunals, and she seems to draw a little trouble in two places, London and Washington. She seems to draw less trouble in Europe from where she comes. And you, it makes one wonder about the tensions between the great powers as they try to settle Syria's hash.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other interesting thing here is that we all know that Obama sets a red line. You know, if the Syrian government uses chemical weapons, that's a red line, which will presumably provoke some kind of stepped-up, direct, open U.S. military intervention. But he didn't set a red line for the rebels' use of chemical weapons. In fact, as you know, I mean, when the issue of the rebels using chemical weapons was raised with the White House, the White House spokesperson simply dismissed this and said this was not possible. And of course, we haven't seen much in the media since about the issue of rebels using chemical weapons. The other issue about the red line is that, I mean, the moment that Obama set his red line, he established a motivation for rebels to claim that they had been gassed by the government, because doing so then would put pressure on Western powers, and the United States in particular, to step up its intervention in Syria on their behalf.
Yeah, this is gowans.wordpress.com. It's actually Stephen Gowans, but make sure you go to the site and to read the article. You know, Stephen, that's another question. They've really given themselves some nice options, have they not? That is that, in a way, from the point of view of the guy who wants to butt in, he could play either one. If they said, well, we think maybe the bad guys are the rebels, but obviously we have to settle this matter, right? We have to step in.
Yes. No matter what, we'll step in.
Yeah, I mean, the answer to any chemical problem, no matter which side it ends up in the hands of, is that clearly Uncle Sam has to do something about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
You make a lot of points here, too, about, double standards, which is almost an understatement. This is a country with weapons of mass destruction, putting it rather mildly, some of which are chemical, I understand. That would be my understanding. And also, there's a neighboring state, Israel, which I believe is not just alleged to have, and everybody understands they have nuclear, but they have all these other types of nefarious weapons as well. And yet all this discussion is, we have to find out about Syria. I mean, how do you even open a discussion if you're not going to talk about the first two problems?
Yeah, I mean, and that's typical. I mean, the country that has the greatest number of weapons of mass destruction, the United States, is the greatest manufacturer of them. Now claims to be the guardian of the peoples of the world against the use of weapons of mass destruction. Also, we should add, the only country that's ever used what should really be called, I mean, which is the real weapon of mass destruction, which is nuclear weapons.
Yes, twice.
Yes. And also, perhaps has used biological weapons as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's some interesting work, though, or arguments about chemical weapons and biological weapons that perhaps they shouldn't be really regarded as weapons of mass destruction. They're certainly not as destructive as atomic weapons, and they're not as destructive as many conventional weapons as well. You can do a lot of damage with conventional ordnance without reaching for weapons of mass destruction. Certainly the United States could do far more damage without weapons of mass destruction than the Syrian government could do if it in fact actually did use chemical weapons.
Well, by the way, it's as old as since they arrived, I believe, at the First World War. Militaries had trouble employing these things without harming themselves. It's proven to be, when we talk about it, I mean, I think the history is it's a fairly inefficient and dangerous. There's a great danger of self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, that's true of chemical weapons and biological weapons. You can use them, but they're very messy. They're very unpredictable. They could blow back upon you. And so that's one of the reasons why they're not often used. And also, there's a defense against chemical weapons, which is a gas mask. And in World War One, when soldiers were equipped with protective equipment against chemical weapons, the chemical weapons proved very ineffective. Apparently, only 1% of battle deaths in World War One were due to gas.
Well,
you're far more likely to die from a bullet wound.
Yeah, bullets are pretty precise. It doesn't have a big curve factor. this is Steve Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. Well, Stephen, you get right to the basic point about, well, then what is it that, why is Syria targeted? And you run through all those reasons they give. You know, we want the Syrian people to be free of oppression, and we want them to have a bunch of other nice things. But list the reasons, if you would, that they actually want to get rid of Syria's leadership.
Yeah, well, maybe one of the best ways to illustrate this is to talk about, there's something that I was doing some research on today. And I was kind of inspired to do this when I read the Assad interview, because Assad talked about, you know, it's hard to believe that the rebels or the United States really is concerned about democracy, because they say that they want pluralist democracy, a multi-party democracy, and we actually introduced reforms to provide that. They rewrote the Constitution, and they rewrote the Constitution in such a way as to allow more parties. At one point, the Ba'athist Party was regarded as kind of the lead party in Syrian society. Mm-hmm. But the Constitution's been rewritten to allow more parties to exist. It's also been rewritten to allow anyone to stand for president so long as they meet certain basic residency and age requirements. So in effect, what the Assad government has done was bowed to these alleged demands for pluralistic, multi-party democracy. So they wrote this constitution. They put it to a referendum. It was approved. They've since had parliamentary elections, and presidential elections are scheduled for next year. Mm-hmm. And Assad said, we did all of these things, and what was striking was that every step we took in the reform process, the level of terrorism escalated. And I remember at the time that the new constitution was introduced that Western governments dismissed it as meaningless, and the opposition said, well, this is too late. Well, what do you mean too late? I mean, yeah. It's like, you know,
yeah,
turn into a pumpkin at midnight.
Yeah, I mean, that the guy who was found the other day on television, a leader, an identified leader, eating a human heart, says, it's too late. Mm. I've decided I'm going for cannibalism. You had your chance at democracy.
Right. I mean, if you're truly, your goal is to achieve a pluralistic, multi-party democracy, and it's being handed to you, then you leap at the chance and say, why should I carry on this war when I'm being given what I asked for?
Yes.
But they said, no, it's too late. So mm-hmm. I looked at the Constitution. You read the Constitution. It's a very interesting document, and it also shows you why it is that the rebels rejected it and why it is that the United States rejected it. The first thing in the preamble to the Constitution says that Syria is in the forefront of confrontation with the Zionist enemy and is the bedrock of resistance against colonial hegemony on the Arab world. So it begins by saying, you know, we're going to continue in the manner that we always have, which is resisting Israel. I mean, we're in a technical state of war with Israel. We're not going to become a peace partner to Israel. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you can say is Assad made a concession to the wrong group. I mean, he's made concessions to Syrians, but the United States wanted to make concessions to Israel, which is, he didn't do that in this case. Mm-hmm. Secondly, then the Constitution kind of formalizes the political orientation of the Syrian Baathists. And this is kind of summed up by Assad, who says, Syria is an independent state working for the interests of its people rather than making the Syrian people work for the interests of the West. And so the Constitution now says that important sectors of the Syrian economy must remain publicly owned and operated in the interests of Syrians as a whole. So the Constitution's now freezing out U.S., Western firms.
That is not the World Bank formula for how to run a country.
Yeah, exactly. And then he says, or then the Constitution says, and this is where the Islamists, because everyone's acknowledging now. I mean, when this conflict started, Assad said, look, these are Islamists leading the rebellion. They're getting foreign funding. We've had a long history of Islamic eruptions in Israel. I'm not in Israel, in Syria. I mean, this is just a continuation of what, you know, one historian called Syria's long civil war. And that was rejected at the time, because you recall the narrative was that this was a pro-democratic uprising against a terrible dictator. But now everyone kind of acknowledges that. I mean, the Wall Street Journal is talking about, well, it looks like, you know, this is really being dominated by Islamists affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And the New York Times says, well, you know, they're really frustrated in Washington because they can't seem to build an opposition that's secular.
Yeah.
So now the Constitution says, okay, you can have parties beyond the Baathist party, but the party cannot be based on religion, it can't be based on sect, it can't be based on gender or gender or race or color. So in effect, it's saying that you cannot have a party which aspires to establish an Islamic state.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, the Islamists are going to reject that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are all kinds of other things that Washington's not going to like. For example, enshrined in the Constitution are provisions for Social Security. Enshrined in the Constitution is the requirement that the tax system be progressive. Enshrined in the Constitution is provisions for free education at all levels and free health care. Not the kinds of things that Washington is going to approve of.
They'll put you down violently here for that. I mean, if you want that.
And finally, they also make a provision that says that half of the seats in the People's Assembly must be filled by workers and peasants.
Wow.
Which is probably taking a step toward kind of a real, genuine democracy that...
which was a road they were on about a generation ago, right? It's like they were going back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them.
Absolutely.
And by the way, on the point about, you know, there won't be religious-based parties, I mean, they should say to the Americans, does this look familiar to you? You recognize any of this? Put smelling salts under Uncle Sam's nose. Oh, hello. Have the religious zealots taken over Washington? Oh, I know the answer to that one. Well, now this is Stephen Gowans. Gowans.wordpress.com. It's a new article just been published together with the one on May 5th about the Israel claiming the right to self-defense. And I want to bring up those two subjects, Russia and Israel. Today's story, the recent days, is that now it does look like Soviet... Wow. See, all of us are having tongue problems. Russian Navy has arrived in some numbers in the Mediterranean, and they're talking like they intend to stay,
mm-hmm.
Which... If you indulge me, I remember that Abraham Lincoln was very happy in 1863 to see the Russian fleet arrive at San Francisco and New York to show just a little kindred interest in the claims of the British that they might intervene in the American Civil War. Again, I'd like to put smelling salts under Uncle Sam's nose, but what do you make of the Russians doing that? Because all of our newspapers have been saying, oh, it looks like the Russians are going to back off. They're going to go mind their own business. They're wising up. Have you been following that?
Yeah. I mean, the kind of like part of what I've been calling the axis of resistance or independence. You may have heard that recently the UN General Assembly passed a resolution kind of condemning the Syrian government. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to look at who supported it and who was against it. And who supported it was, you know, these paragons of democracy like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and you know, these kind of Arab petro-monarchies that are supporting the so-called pro-democracy rebels. And then, you know, other proponents of peace in the world, like the United States and the UK and France. I mean, they all supported this General Assembly resolution. But then you look at who was opposed. There were 14 countries opposed. There was Russia, was one. China was another. And Iran, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, Ecuador, Bolivia. I probably missed some. But, you know, these are countries that have tried to charge an independent course free from domination by the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see that they will occasionally give each other some support.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, again, our media is so unhelpful to they said, well, a UN Assembly, General Assembly resolution, and that this is really going to put pressure on Assad. However, those who've been soberly following said, well, what you notice is that the vote was held last year, and this year the votes in favor declined dramatically. Mm-hmm. I think they dropped by 22 states who did not go along with this.
Right.
So even on the diplomatic front, the U.S., which has had been riding pretty high, has trouble covering up that sort of that fact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had another theme that you struck with the article about which is also highly, this is one that gets argued about a lot, is the Israelis have bombed Syria at least twice. And, of course, it's all treated like, oh, that's what they do. And nobody knows why. They haven't really said they did do it, although they do say they did it, except they don't say they did it. And this is all permitted just to go on. And then the White House and others say, well, that's, you know, what they do in self-defense, we're 100% behind them. Well, where's the self-defense? And by the way, I mean, doesn't Syria have any right to self-defense?
Yeah, I know. Israel has the right. Whatever it does is attributed to self-defense. And, yeah, so does Syria not have the right to self-defense as well? Apparently not, according to the United States. And, of course, the argument that was being made was that Israel was simply intercepting missiles that were being transferred from Iran through Syria to Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. And we can ask whether Hezbollah has the right of self-defense as well. But, I mean, even some in the U.S. press were pointing out that, well, why would we say these missiles are being transferred to Hezbollah? These are the kinds of missiles that the Syrian army itself is using. Mm-hmm. You could certainly make a compelling case that Israel is simply trying to destroy these missiles because it weakens Syria. And yes, certainly Israel is has an interest in seeing Syria weakened.
Yes. Now, and by the way, I should follow up on that. There's a this is gallant.wordpress.com. There's the idea that these people say, well, you know, you have pretty scary Islamists there, and obviously Israel wouldn't want that. But there are people more and more persuasively arguing, well, they don't mind. Why would they mind? I mean, Syria is a formidable state with formidable state friends. Islamists, you know, out shooting one another and chasing people, don't pose anywhere near the kind of balance or threat that the actual state of Syria does.
No, you're right. And I mean, Israel and the West have often used Islamists as kind of this cat's paw or a way to disrupt or to weaken, you know, more powerful forces or states that have been opposed to Israel or opposed to Western interests. And all the, I don't think that an Islam, there's really no chance that Islamists are going to come to power in Syria.
Yeah. By the way, there's no proof either that they're actually even well organized. I probably should have been. They really could be just called mercenaries because they, when we call them Islamists, we don't really quite know who we're talking about, do we?
No, I mean it's this diverse, heterogeneous group. There are all kinds of militias, and that's something that Assad has said in this recent interview. You want me to negotiate with the opposition, but the opposition now is made up of all kinds of Islamist groups. There's so many of them; they're disconnected. Who is it that I'm supposed to talk to? And he also pointed out, you know, would the United States talk to terrorists? Would France talk to terrorists or London? Ooh. I mean, why is it that Syria is expected to negotiate with Islamists who are using terrorist methods? Who would, I mean, if the roles were reversed and Syria was a U.S. ally, I mean, these people would be regularly denounced as terrorists. Instead, they're called rebels.
Yeah. Yes. By the way, the terrorist card is pretty much burnt up in America's hand at this point. People are, you know, it's almost getting tiresome that their abuse of this of that language.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Stephen Gowans. We're really grateful. I think you got to put a bunch of your essays together and publish a book so we could all have one. But thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right.
Bye.
Steve Gowans. Gowans.wordpress.com. And Phil, you have a show tomorrow.
Yes, Classical Underground, 12 noon.
12 noon. And everybody get a copy of Ted Schmidt's new book, Never Neutral. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. We'll see you next week.